It's Wednesday, the 25th of October, and you're listening to the Red Army Roundup. I'm your host, Paul Hinton, and as ever, I'm joined by Sean Phillips and Aaron Wren. Hello there, gents.
Hello there, Paul.
Good evening, Paul.
And we're back again with an action-packed show this week. We're going to look back at a very mixed bag of a weekend for the Cardiff Devils, talking about Mark Richardson's testimonial events the last two evenings. We've had a few Ramite suggestions, and surprisingly, after the weekend we had a couple of burning questions. And obviously, given today's breaking news, I think a bit of a discussion on DOPS will probably fall out of that before we preview next weekend's action against Coventry in the Challenge Cup at home, and then the long trip up to Fife on Sunday. So, lots to talk about, and well, luckily, the first thing we're talking about is the thing that we're not really going to want to talk about, but definitely needs some discussion. Sean, it was yourself and me that made the trip up to Sheffield. Aaron, I think you watched on the webcast?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, it is sometimes difficult to get an impression of how awful something is over a webcast, I find, and what was on the ice in a Cardiff Devils shirt was awful on Saturday. There's no way of dressing it up. A 4-0 defeat that, if anything, probably flattered the Devils on the score sheet, Sean?
Yeah, probably, yeah.
You know, the game started, you know, not massively disappointed. You know, it was, you know, Sheffield scored after 13 minutes, so your first half of the period, your Devils kept it tight. There wasn't a lot of standout chances that I can remember. I've got to be honest, the game does become a bit of a blur. There were a couple of minors each, which were both killed before Colton Fretter, and only on the third penalty of the night, scored shorthanded. It was the first call that was the mistake from Ben Bams, I think, Sean.
Yes, it was, yeah. Yeah. Colton Fretter shorthanded from John Armstrong, yeah, because I remember everyone commenting that John Armstrong forced the turnover, and that, Armstrong, goalie killer, was at the forefront of it, as ever.
Yeah, but Ben Bams goes behind the goal line to play the puck and gets his angles and the weight of the pass horrifically wrong. The puck bounces out and, you know, ends up in the net, and Sheffield are 1-0 up, and, you know, I don't think you can ever begrudge a team going to Sheffield and thinking, we don't want to concede early, we want to keep it tight, you know, get 10 minutes into the first period at 0-0, and yeah, you've killed it, you've not let the crowd come into the game as much as they ever do in Sheffield. So you might play a little bit more defensive. But in those opening 13 minutes, I don't think we ever looked like we were there to try and win the game at that stage. But after going a goal down, and then I don't think our attitude seemed to change, and we ended up 2-0 down with a minute left in the first round.
Yeah, I got to be honest with you. We can talk through, you know, the scorers and all this sort of thing. First is last, because the overall picture of the game is just horrendous. Okay, so we'll talk through it. Colton Fretter scores a first goal, followed by Matt Marquardt in the first period. Andreas Jamtin scores in the second period to make it 3-0. Then Matt Marquardt scores a power play goal in the third period to finish up the scoring at 4-0. And like you said, Paul, it absolutely flattered us. 4-0. We went up into Sheffield with absolutely, we looked like we just didn't go out there to try and win that game from the off. And we went up there a couple of years ago with that mentality, and these results are what came of it. You know, we go up there and try and play too defensive. We don't go out there to compete. We looked like we had no interest in going out there and winning a hockey game. Absolutely zero interest. There was no passion, there was no drive, there was no creativity. We lost all our battles left, right and centre. There was no sort of, you know, dynamic movement going into the zone. Zone entry was poor. When we did gain the zone, we didn't do a lot with the puck. Just individual errors all over the ice, from the forwards all the way back to the netminder and Ben Bounds. You know, how many times has he, you know, played the puck and ever that ever happened with us in 3 and a bit years? It's never happened. We did not deserve anything out of that game. And, you know, it is worth noting that we were out a fair few key players, you know, Joey Haddad missing, Justin Farina, Patrick Aslin, and then Mark Richardson. We did add Tyson Strachan to the lineup, who'd come straight off the back of his however many hour flight, but it just wasn't good enough. And I felt completely cheated out of my time going to watch that game, because, you know, as a fan, you make the effort to go up there, and it's nothing on, I know it's nothing compared to playing a game, but, you know, you expect, you know, some heart to go into it, and just no heart went into that at all, and it was massively, massively disappointing.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, you mentioned four players out, but with Strachan in and Luke Piggott also coming in, only two of those four players could have come into the lineup, and you would have probably had to lose Luke Piggott to do that anyway. I think Luke Piggott probably had one shift, and I think on that shift, two hits were thrown, and they were literally the only two hits I can remember of the whole game that being thrown by a Devils player. It was, as Sean said, just a totally flat performance. Aaron, I'm assuming that, you know, we obviously went up, had the sulk of, you know, having gone all that way. I can't imagine it looked anything other than that bad watching on the webcast.
No, it was diabolical. You know, it's hard to keep, like, I struggle to keep interest with things on TV at the moment, like, anyway. But when it's such a poor effort and performance, it was just, like, I think if the fact I didn't pay £10 to watch a stream, I think I would have turned it over and not been bothered about the result, because, like Sean said, they couldn't be bothered to try and win the game. So why should I be bothered to watch the podcast, webcast, sorry? But, you know, I think the mentality that we went up with not to win is absolutely pathetic. You know, it doesn't matter who you are, what team you are, if you give yourself, if you play with all the guts you got, you're always going to give yourself a chance to win every night. If you go up there with a doubt in your mind that you can't win, then, you know, you've already lost before you get off the coach. So I think that's probably an issue throughout the team that needs to be addressed. You know, if you play at your hardest, you always give yourself a chance. And if they can keep that in mind, you know, we could be unstoppable. But going to rinks where you're expecting to lose is just, it's just asking for a beating, really. And you know, like last year, me and Sean mentioned it to me one day in the week, you know, not last year, 2 years ago when we won the Challenge Cup, you know, we got absolutely destroyed 11-0, but you still had a couple of guys who went out there, you know, yeah, they did try to goon it up, but it still give that little bit of intensity to the game. But, you know, it was just nothing on Saturday, and I was gutted. I wasted a tenner on it, to be honest.
I am massively impressed you made it through the whole webcast, though, because if there wasn't a bus outside, which was the only way I could have got back to Cardiff, I'm quite confident that I wouldn't have been there 60 minutes. So,
to be honest, for the last 2 periods, I was more interested in my Chinese than the game. So,
you know. I wasn't paying massive attention, hence not a lot of discussion around the walls. Some of us nipped out for KFC.
Yeah, some of us did, yeah. In fairness, with about 6 minutes left to go. But there we go. I think my biggest problem with it is that, you know, Aaron hit the nail on the head. If you go with the mindset that you know that you're going to win a game, then you give yourself the best chance of doing it. But we not only went up there and didn't try to, you know, we've gone up there in the past and just tried not to lose, and I hate that way of playing, and it hasn't worked for us in the last couple of years. And whenever, every game last year that we went to Sheffield and won, we went out there and we tried to win it from the get-go. And the one game we lost last year, which was before the, you know, the penultimate game of the season up there, that's what happened. We looked nervous and jittery, but...
Yeah, I think that the...
You know, when we...
The one loss last year wasn't even a... That's not the way we set up. I think it was just... I think the realization of what we could do was starting to maybe get to a few players. Yeah. It wasn't like we don't want to lose. And yeah, I'll ask you the question as you're on the point. Straight after the game, Andrew Lord gave you quite an emotional interview, I think, saying how there was no compete, how, you know, it wasn't acceptable levels. You know, we were missing two imports. Do you think that would have been an instruction to the team for the way to set up, or more of a mentality of individuals that just seep through the team that we're a couple of players down, we've got to keep it tight? because it's interesting. This isn't the first away performance of the year. It's not the first performance anywhere, but you know, of the away trips that have been in the UK that you know, coach has been run to, that there's been a lot of fans there. You know, there's been three quite heavy defeats now this season. So is, you know, is it just a mentality thing? Do you think it's a way the team being set up, or I don't know.
I really don't know. And I've asked myself this question as well, because, you know, if I'm, you know, say for example, say I'm Andrew Hotham and I go up there to play a game and I know that my team is shorthanded and we're in for a real rough ride tonight. And we've got to play a game tomorrow against another one of our major oppositions. You know, am I going to go out there and bust my nuts and still lose a game because we're just too short and we're not going to win? Or do I, you know, ease off a little bit, give ourselves the best chance to win tomorrow when we may have, you know, one of these guys back? Or do you know what I mean? Like that sort of has seeped into my mind of whether we went with that mentality of being so short benched that we thought we're going to get tanked. You know, we got to play another game tomorrow. Why waste all our energy tonight when we can just use it tomorrow? And
nobody did come back the next night. That would have,
no,
you know.
No. I agree with you completely. But what I mean is that, you know, if you're going to go out there and bust your nuts and still lose a game, and then you've got to do it the following night, you give yourself less chance of winning the following night. So you basically not turn up for that first game. Do you know what I mean? That's the way that I felt like we approached that game was, look, guys, we are short. We've got another game tomorrow. Let's go. If we're going to win one game this weekend, this probably isn't it. We've got a better chance of winning tomorrow. And so I do not think that the Andrew Lord would have gone into that game with that mentality. Some of the players I can't speak for, but, you know, I can understand that in a sense, but don't waste my time. And, you know, basically, I wasted a day to go and watch it. Never mind the money. The money's nothing. It doesn't mean that all that much to me. But just don't waste people's time. Do you know what I just, it really, really riles me. And it hurt. Go on.
Yeah, same conversation, you know, had on versus, you know, not so much after Guildford. I think at the time it felt like a bit of a freak result. But after the Milton Keynes game, you know, it was a number of people on the bus saying those exact words, you know, if you're not going to go out there and give 100%, give us a heads up so we're not all spending, you know, 4 or 5 hours each way on a bus, however long, in Milton Keynes in Sheffield. Nobody wants to be in Milton Keynes in Sheffield, you know, in either side of the game as well. It's, you know, we're not going to beautiful places where you can spend a lovely afternoon and then have some disappointing hockey. It's it's probably the most negative opening sort of 12 minutes or so of a podcast we've ever done, right?
Yeah, it is. But I think it is fair to look at it that way. You know, sport isn't, you know, it's not all roses and wins and trophies and all that sort of thing, which I saw on Twitter this week. I think it was from yourself, Paul.
It was.
But, you know, just compete, just try, go out there and just try, because, you know, we'll talk about the Nottingham game in just a second, but the way we played in that first period against Nottingham, if we played like that and lost the game 4-1, I would have been happy. You know, the result wasn't important to me, it was the fact that they put some passion and some effort into it, and we just didn't see it on Saturday, and it was literally heart-wrenching to watch. It literally hurt. It hurt a lot.
Yeah, I don't think there's anywhere in the league that probably hurts as much to lose anyway as Sheffield, you know.
Yeah.
One of our biggest rivals, and especially over recent years with, you know, how close everything's been in the league. So, and having to listen to Dave Sims while you're losing just makes it a little bit worse. Yeah, like you said, it was a bad day, and I think you probably had the hope for Sunday that there might be a bit of a bounce back performance, but, you know, myself especially, I had zero expectations. I think from what we'd seen this season, I know we've beaten Nottingham at home quite comfortably already this year, but felt that, you know, they'd look the better of the two teams out of Sheffield themselves from what we'd seen.
Yeah.
I'd put my expectations extremely low. I'd very little enthusiasm to go to the game, which, as it happens, has turned out quite well this season. Every time I've walked into Iceland or Wales and enthusiastic for a game, it's think Davos and Vecua are the
Davos, Davos, Vecua are now Nottingham, and we've been in exactly the same boat, not wanting to be there. And yeah, we just need to not look forward to home games at all, Paul.
I'll just stop looking forward to hockey in general, and perhaps we'll go and beat until the end of the year. But what a amazing turnaround, Aaron. Just a chalk and cheese performance.
Yeah, you know, it was like we watched two different teams. You know, it was exactly the same people at Iced. You had the exact same team at Iced in Nottingham and Sheffield, and it was like two different teams played. You know, we looked like a championship winning team. We looked like we wanted to play hockey. We had that heart. We had that desire. We was winning battles. And when you do, when you come to a game with that kind of attitude, you're always going to give yourself a chance to win. And, you know, Jake Morissette opened the scoring with another freak goal, which I still don't understand how he scored it. But
I'm not even, I thought at the time it may have even, I've not watched the replays, I should have done, but the puck may have even gone in off Suave, the Nottingham player. It looked as it bounced back originally, but Sean, you might have had a better vantage point from your end of the ring.
Yeah, Morissette sort of fired the puck on goal, and I was shocked that it went in as well, because I thought Garnett had it covered, and then suddenly I think Morissette might have got a little tip on it again on the rebound, and it just happened to squeeze past him. And yeah, it was a good, really good start. We'd opened up quite well. I think we deserved the lead. Point blank, we played very, very hard, and a bit of a strange one. But again, that tenacity to get the puck, get a stick on the puck, just the battle. You know, Morissette's got to work hard to get that second that second swing on it, and he got it.
Yeah, just before we move on from the first period, Aaron mentioned how it was the same players, but we're probably worth discussing sort of at the opening start that we set up completely differently. So in Sheffield, we'd run with 6D, and I think it would be 11 forwards icing, but pretty much ran three forward lines. But instead, against Nottingham, we opened up with 5 in Port D, Mark Lewis up front with Josh Batch, and Luke Piggott getting a regular shift. And Todd Calmer mentioned in the auction last night, after Richie Sessomonial, how he felt that Luke Piggott was the difference maker, the guy that got the team fired up and played with massive energy, especially considering it was probably his first meaningful ice time of the season. So, you know, a big change in the way that the exact same players took to the ice, and, you know, as Sean said, and Aaron, made a big difference, and, you know, gave the Devils that 1-0 lead at the end of the first period. Second period was a weird one, Sean. You know, again, carried on the similar vein, but no scoring until nearly three quarters of the way through the period, and then all hell seemed to break loose.
Yeah, it was, again, we were competing for every puck on the boards. We were throwing our weight around. We were playing hard, and that's all you can ask for. You know, you sort of felt like Nottingham are a quality side. At some stage, you know, it is going to break, and maybe we won't quite catch ourselves lucky. But then I think Matt Pope breaks up a play sort of as Nottingham are coming behind the net and pokes it out to Joey Martin in front, who absolutely rips one top shelf. Really, really good to see Joey Martin get on the score sheet. I think Todd Kelman mentioned it in the pregame that he's just getting frustrated and gripping the stick a little bit too tightly. And so, it was good to see him get on the board. Pope did some great work to get the puck to him as well. So good to double the lead there. And like you said, all hell breaks loose then. The third goal is something which I've watched the replay on countless number of times. We just have some such weird goals being scored for us the last couple of years. You look at Davey Phillips' own goal last year against us for Sheffield. And then you get this one from, it's been credited to Jake Morissette, in fairness, as his second goal of the game, but I don't think it's quite fair to award him that one, because it was a perfect swing from, I think it was it Sorvey?
Yes, I think it was.
Yeah, and so there's a bit of a battle on the boards, and Sorvey loses his foot and is on his knees, swings his stick of the puck to try and ring it around the boards, completely catches it at the weirdest angle, and it goes straight through Michael Garner's five hole, and we find ourselves with a 3-goal lead. And yeah, that was that's one of the weirder goals I've ever seen since watching hockey.
You made, yeah, just a couple of weeks after the Justin Farina overtime winner that came off the backboards as well. You know, so there are some weird ones. And you know, still 4 minutes in the period, and still enough time for another bit of a howler in terms of Mike Garnett, where Paul Crowder couldn't see what happened. Just seemed to fire the puck on net from having it pinned up against the boards, and puck goes between the post and Garnett's shoulder, and you know, the lights on and everyone's cheering. He's looking around for the puck with absolutely no idea it's gone through him, which led to him getting yanked. Not a night that he'll want to remember. But the Devils are 4-0 up with a minute and a half to play in the second period, and just an absolutely crazy 4-minute spell that you know, properly put the game to bed.
Yeah, and again, what did we do? You know, you work, you know, maybe a freak goal in there and a bit of a bad performance from Garnett, but we played hard. You know what I mean? Like we just hit a lot. We were fast. We looked like scoring a lot. Every time we entered the zone, we looked like we were going to do something creative and try and get ourselves in on goal. And it was just a total parallel to the previous night.
Yeah. So a minute and a half left. We did give Nottingham a chance to get I'd call it a consolation, but I suppose getting it back to within 3 goals at the end of the second. You know, we gave him a little bit of life when Eric Lindhagen got that one goal. Being the pessimist in me did worry a little bit. Aaron, was it a concern, or did you think that that period had put the game to bed regardless of the final goal?
Yeah, I think it was over and done with by then. I think I don't think they could have done a lot more, and I think the way we played the game, we played with intensity, we played like we wanted to win, and I don't think how hard Nottingham came at us, I still think we would have come up with a W, just because I think we needed that bounce back win from the night before to, turn the weekend around and hopefully turn the season around, and hopefully we can start playing more consistent hockey.
Yeah, and so third period played out that way, Sean, with another couple of properly quick fire goals just over halfway through the third period.
Yeah, and by that stage, like you said, the game was done. It was good to see Morissette grab a hat trick. I know that the second one was probably a bit dubious in that, and but yeah, it's good to get him firing. And I think the best thing about that is that when we do have injury problems, Morissette gets some ice time on maybe on the better lines with some better guys. And And it's good to see him, that confidence in him is important when we do have those issues, because we do need him to be a big game player when we have injuries. And he's doing well, all right for himself at the moment.
Yeah, guess his power play goal, and then literally 20 seconds later, I can't remember his first name, Gagnon's more obsessed with, was it Gagnon, I think, more obsessed with trying to get Paul Crowder. We're just cross-checking Crowder. Might be Suave, actually. And just left Josh Batch with a chance out in front that he buried to make it 6-1. And I sort of really enjoyed seeing Josh Batch and Mark Lewis up on that forward line. I don't know if it'll be a long-term thing when everyone's fit, but what a horrific prospect that must be for opposition defensemen, seeing those two come bombing down the wing into the corners with you. Not even did get one back, I think it's 6-2, but
with Matt Myers in that line as well.
And Matt Myers, because Lewis and Batch isn't horrific enough to play against. You might as well have one of the grittiest centres in British ice hockey as well, out there as well, who also knows how to make life difficult for defencemen. So, yeah, can't have been nice at all.
I thought Lewis had a fantastic game as well, which is worth knowing. I thought he looked like he made an absolute menace of himself and really enjoyed his game as well.
Yeah, and like you said, it's sort of good to have the options again. You've got Jake Morissette in a bit of form. you know, Lewis showing that he's more than adept at stepping forward if needed. And Josh Batch has shown at times this year that when he's needed to step back, he's put in you know, some really good composed performances on D. So, you know, that flexibility is there in the team. It's just getting the consistency, I think, is probably the biggest challenge for us going forward from the way the last month or so has gone. That was the game. And that was the weekend. As we said, massively mixed bag. If you're going to, I suppose from a marketing point of view, if you're going to lose a game horrifically and win a game comfortably, they did it the right way around. Sellout crowd got to see a really good win, which will do a lot more than, you know, 80 to 100 fans on the road seeing it, but it doesn't make it any nicer for those that were there. Player of the week time. I'm quite confident that I've not chosen first this week, and as I have put some thought into it, I'm going to go first. I feel awful not choosing Jake Morissette as he scored a hat-trick, but feel that anyone who was massively involved with Saturday has got to have a couple of negative points against him. And for that reason, it's Luke Piggott, I guess, my vote. Said hardly got a shift in Sheffield and played exceptionally. He seemed to be skating better than he skated for us for last season, not as a negative thing, just he looked rapid. He played the body. His positional play was, you know, sensible. He was never out of position and just gave a massive jump to us. You know, that fourth line was menacing, kept Nottingham pinned back when they needed to. And just that energy from his first shift just really seemed to give us a lift across a much better attitude across. So Luke Piggott gets my vote. Let's ask Aaron next.
Unlike you, Paul, I've not really thought about it, but
you surprised me.
I think I'm going to give it to Mark Lewis. For me, he played. You know, I'm not really going to judge us on Sunday night's game. Saturday night is mainly Sunday. I thought, you know, he stepped up in a big way. You know, he's played D for the last couple of, well, back and forth the last couple of years, and I think the fact that he was going from playing forward on in some situations, then when he was on a penalty kill, he was dropping back to D, and it was the same. You know, he done it mostly all night. You know, he was playing dual roles, and he played dual roles fantastically, and like, it was the first look we got at him as a forward, and he was an absolute demon. You know, as you guys said, you know, if you've got someone that size skating towards you into the corners, you're always going to back out. And I think, you know, with this signing of Tyson Strachan, I think if that's the swap we got, I think we've got a very, very good player in Mark Lewis in doing a very good job. And I thought he'd done it perfectly on Sunday, caused Nottingham problems, turned over the puck, went, drove hard to the net. You know, he didn't really do much wrong and covered on D when he had to. So, yeah, you know, it should be Jake Morissette for his hat trick, but I do feel like Mark Lewis played a key role in Sunday night's performance. So, yeah, it's Mark Lewis for me.
But we are being megally harsh. Does he get a vote? Do we have a winner, or is it someone else, Sean?
We don't have a winner. I like yourselves. I don't think Saturday is much stock to take into account. I thought on Sunday that I thought Paul Crowder had another great game. So that's my vote. He did score a goal, a bit of a fan off it, off Michael Garner, but nevertheless, he's just working hard, and I think that some people have given Crowder a real, real hard time and seem very reluctant to sort of change their minds on him when he's performing well. And at the moment, he's performing well. You know, everyone had a bad game on Saturday, but you look at his last couple of weeks of performances and he's just been improving game on game. And I think he played really well on Sunday. He works very well on the power play as well. When he gets, he's a very intelligent player. And I think his power play work is going to do us some good if he does maintain a spot on there. And yeah, I think that he's massively, massively underestimated in terms of our fan base. And yeah, I'm going to go with Paul Crowder.
I was gonna swing that way too, Sean, but you know, the way he's playing, I don't want it to go to his head, and performance. So
I'm sure if he knows what you think of him, Aaron, his performances will soon take a downturn.
Hey, I give him praise the last couple of weeks.
That's why.
I think your opinion is probably the defining factor for Paul Grada. I think another good shout. It is really good to see him getting ice time. He did start slowly, I think, but that was to be expected, as you said. And it is good to see him being rewarded with ice time that we're rewarding on the power play, that we're rewarding good performances with power play time. And he's definitely making the most of it. So we don't have a winner, and you've got to think with a weekend with one of those two performances in it. It's possibly fair that's the way it's worked out, that nobody was able to stand up over the whole weekend and make it theirs. So that is Player of the Week. Before we move on, as we're talking about the weekend, Aaron mentioned him. We've sort of brushed over the fact that Tyson Strachan made his debut for us. In Sheffield, I think he looked a little bit off the pace. I think that is absolutely understandable, given the fact that I think he'd had 45-minute training with the team, had landed a couple of hours later than he was scheduled after almost a day's worth of flights, two or three flights he had in as well. But you looked a bit more composed on Sunday. Sean, what was your take on Tyson Strachan, especially probably on Sunday, where he was a little bit more settled?
Yeah, I think that he's going to be a good signing for us. I really do. He looks, I think on Saturday, he did look very, very disjointed. I think he probably played on Saturday and just thought, what the hell have I done coming into this team? with the way we played. But I don't think it's fair to judge him on that game at all. And on Sunday, I thought he was a little bit better, and obviously the rest of the team picking their game up probably helped him. But I think he's got a good hockey brain. He seems to sort of play the puck very well in key situations when he has to. And he's gonna finish all his hits. He looks like a defenseman who won't take any nonsense. I'm looking forward to seeing what he has to offer, really. I think give him a couple of weeks to, buy into the systems and all that sort of thing, and he'd be a really, really worthwhile addition to the roster. And he doesn't look very, very mobile. I think that was my one biggest concern. There were stages where Sheffield and Nottingham were just sort of playing the puck around the boards, and he wasn't very active in, trying to force him to make the wrong play sort of thing. But I think that just came from the jet lag and all that sort of thing. So I'm optimistic about him going forward.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. Anything to add on that, Aaron, or in agreement?
No, pretty much hit the nail on the head. I think he's a player we need, with the fact that he's more or less a stay-at-home defenseman. But, he proved me wrong a little bit. I was basically saying last week that we shouldn't have signed him, and he can't play hockey. But, like I said, what do I know?
Last week, Aaron didn't go quite that far, I think. I'm defending you, Aaron, against yourself at the moment.
Yeah, I know. But I was an optimistic like you two guys about the sign-in. So I was really critical of him on Sunday, and realizing that, he did fly three different flights, trained 45 minutes, and then had to travel to Sheffield and play a game. So it's understandable if he wasn't up to scratch. But yeah, he looks solid. I think he adds that dynamic that we're missing at the back end. So, it's going to be a positive if he is the player that we're expecting. And I really hope he is. Only time will tell.
Yeah, be good to see him this coming weekend with a full week's worth of training under his belt. So what a crazy week to come into, with a testimonial dinner on the Monday and a testimonial game on the Tuesday. Following off the crazy Saturday and Sunday as well. So a proper baptism of fire for Tyson Strachan into hockey in the UK. And he's got to watch the whole Dops blow up on Twitter, no doubt, today, if he's on there. So mentioned Mark Richardson's testimonial, then it's one of those things we won't give a goal by goal account of the game. But just to discuss, Aaron, that, you know, two really well-run events on the dinner on Monday, and then the game on Tuesday, I was going to say Saturday. You know, so great to see Mark Richardson getting the plaudits he deserved with, you know, a packed out really good night on Monday for the dinner, and then, you know, a decent crowd, I thought, on Tuesday. Someone did tell me it's the best attended testimonial we've had in Cardiff. It's just in a bigger, especially since the tent days. But obviously there's a lot more empty seats floating around that maybe makes it look a little bit less impressive. But, you know, a successful couple of events for you?
Yeah, definitely. You know, it started with the dinner on Monday. You know, like with the draft, you know, Mark Faulkner and Tyson Marsh both had some good, funny stories to tell about Richie and some past players. Good laugh, good food. You know, celebrating Richie, which was the main cause of it all. And, you know, his speech was short but sweet, but, you know, what do you expect from Richie? And same on Tuesday, like, you know, the game, good. It was good fun, good banter. You know, the skills competition was entertaining. It was a little bit different to what I know as a testimonial. I've only ever seen one other, and it was a full game. So, but yeah, it was quite fun to watch. And yeah, I was just over the moon for Richie. You know, I like Richie's a guy who never really says a lot, but I think you could tell with the smile on his face he had the entire night last night that it meant the world to him. And I can't say much more than thank you to him for 11 years of service that he's given us over the last 11 years. Like, so I've only been around for four and a bit of them. So, but yeah, so what a guy, and no one deserved it more than him, I think.
Not at all. And yeah, the one sort of very slight downside of it is that obviously Kerry Knocker, that he was only able to ice a couple of shifts during the game. Which is a bit of a downside, and it does seem to be the state of our testimonials in recent years, Sean, with Jason Stone and Jared Adams both struggling for fitness when they had their testimonials back in the 10.
I think that Jason Stone has to take a chair on the ice with him and sit on the blue line waiting for a pass to come, and Jared Adams broke his leg falling off a roof.
So we've
had three testimonials in the last however many years. And the players have been struggling to play in them. So we should not have any more testimonials because they're causing injuries.
Players to retire and then do it.
Yeah. Do it when they retire, definitely. But in all seriousness, I unfortunately wasn't able to make either of the events. I was devastated to not be able to be at the game, especially because Mark Richardson is someone who doesn't get a lot of, you know, doesn't get the sort of limelight and all that sort of thing, especially playing with a guy like Andrew Hotham, who's just, you know, awarded with, you know, gets all the awards from around the league as the best defenseman and all this sort of thing. But, you know, I think they come as a double act. I don't think Richardson is the player he is without Hotham. I don't think Hotham is the player he is without Richardson. And Richardson served us so well over these years. And when, you know, times weren't so good and you know, things weren't looking quite so bright, Richardson stayed loyal and stayed with us. And he's, you know, Cardiff's his home, and we're incredibly, incredibly lucky to have him. And I think it will truly, you know, you won't really quite realize it until he, you know, unfortunately, you know, he can't play forever. I think he's got a lot longer, you know, he's got a long time left in him yet, but it's one of those players you really, really won't appreciate how much he meant to you and how good he was until he's gone. And I hope that's not for a long, long time though.
No, just on your point about sort of playing with Andrew Hotham, just he'll repeat a line from Neil Francis that Franny said that if he'd learned to skate backwards and played alongside Mark Richardson, he could have been a 3-time Elite League Defenseman of the Year as well. Andrew Hotham, had a little chuckle at that one, you'd imagine. Or took massive offence at it, but, you know, one or the other.
it's worth noting as well just how much the players, like, were pushing it around the time as well. I think Hotham was one of the people who was massively, you know, tweeting massively in support of it. You know, all the guys put it on Twitter that it was happening, but I think Hotham must have tweeted about 8 times during the day how much he was looking forward to it and all this sort of thing. And that was good to see. It's good to see that they have a good relationship off the ice, and yeah, it was nice to see that that his teammates appreciate him as much as we do.
Yeah, yeah, but most definitely. Yeah, now you can only imagine that his teammates, especially defensemen and bounds, probably appreciate him way more than we do, actually. But yeah, great to see. Right, Sean, you're at this social media time, and I think our mixed weekend woke up the listeners, and we've had a few Ramite suggestions, which I think there's probably quite an easy split between what people loved and hated of the past weekend.
Yeah. Okay. So Jason Manley he hated Saturday, just Saturday in general, and loved Sunday in general. He got the feeling that it wasn't a very pleasant ride home for the team or the fans on Saturday. He couldn't be couldn't be more right about that. We had two from Kenwyn Jones. He said he hated Saturday, apathy and orange, loved Sunday, passion and red, loved Lordo's honesty and hated having the flu. Then he went on to say hate orange and oranges and love banana bread. Jake Morissette's wife Vicky put on Twitter that banana bread was his choice
pre-game
of
meal.
His pre-game meal, and it, you know, turned out to be a hat trick for him. So I think that they all need to start eating it if that's the case. Anthony Edwards said he loved the bullet of a goal from Sauvé and hated getting smashed by Sheffield in his Ramite. And then we had a burning question from Jason Manley, who said... Go on. You go first.
For Jason Manley's burning question, listeners may... I think it was last week, may have even been the week before, his suggestion of best line pairings with... Bert from Greyhound, and he being Bert and Kearney. and he has put, I'd imagine he spent ever since that tweet researching this one. He's managed to get players mainly from the Elite League, but two others just stolen from Elite Prospect, and has suggested that if you had Mike Will, Eric Freshy, Andrew Hotham, Jack Prince, Mark Smith, and Zachary Belair, you would have, well, Will Smith, Freshy, Prince, Hoth, Belair, which... It's some fantastic work and made me chuckle. And I would like, just get thinking, guys, if anyone could think of, it's still, there's a lot of work's gone into that, Jason, but you prefer Burton Kearney. I do prefer Burton Kearney. That is excellent.
I thought his full line was fantastic. I genuinely read it and had a good old giggle to myself for about half an hour. And I can't believe I nearly missed it out as well.
But if anyone could think of anything, just get on Elite Prospects. Elite League preferably, but
yeah,
guess us through the week. So, you know, whatever you can conjure up, I'll take. And I can't imagine we're going to be inundated, but if we have loads, we'll read the best ones out. We'll drip feed them through. You won't just have a show of these. Don't worry. Feel free to send as many as you want. I enjoy them. Yeah, on to the burning question, Sean. Also from Jason, I believe.
Also from Jason Manley, yeah. Jason Manley's hashtag burning question says, have Dops lost the plot? Shockingly low suspension for both the Sheffield and Belfast players, which takes us quite nicely onto your, or to our next topic of conversation, Paul.
Yes, have Dops lost the plot? My theory is that Simon Kirkham is bored of Dops and would like to be sacked. He can't be bothered to write a resignation note because the decisions today are appalling. I can't think of how you can dress it up in any other way. And we've had the usual, what do you expect at Sheffield? It's the Department of Protecting Sheffield. I don't want to buy it. It's really hard not to think that when you look at the bans given to Colton Fretter and Spiro Galakis, respectively. But there's also a decision on against Belfast, call on Jesse Craig from... Guildford, this also shows you've gone to the individual incidents, but it does look like a Sheffield bias, but my gut feeling is it is just gross incompetence, and I cannot think of a better way of putting it. That they are three of the worst decisions I have seen made, probably in anything to do with British ice hockey, and I watched the club be run by Paul Reagan. You know, there were some... it's awful. I can't get over it. And regardless of it being a bad decision, the way it looks, the message is that if you have a couple of bad hits against you, you can take a run at a player not looking, not on the puck, check him to the back of the head, give him a concussion, according to a tweet that Adam Keefe put out earlier, and you'll get a one-game ban for it. So I'd like to wish Colton Fretter good luck the next time he takes the ice against Belfast Giants. Aaron, do you want to talk just about the decisions? Should we go on to the individuals? I've worked myself into such a way that I cannot direct this conversation anymore. Someone take over.
I'm just flabbergasted. It's just absolutely ridiculous. How can you call yourself the Department of Player Safety when you've taken no consideration into a player safety regarding an incident? Like, if what I think you said, Keith said, was true, and that Galakos is injured and he does have a concussion, surely that should be taken into consideration in the ruling of the decision, and surely it should result in a lot more than one game ban for an incident that, what, like you said, was one behind the puck, two from behind on the player, and three, just absolutely reckless and disgusting that he travelled a good 20-30 feet at Colton Fretter is not the fastest player, but he's quick, at full speed, and basically American football hit him from behind and only get one game ban for that. Like, you know, I think the only people who like Sheffield are Sheffield fans in this UK fan base of hockey, and I'm not being against them in a way. I'm just being against the fact that you shouldn't be allowed to do things like that. You know, that is a minimum, like five to 10 game ban for me personally, because there's no consideration. You're not even playing hockey in that kind of situation. You just look into cause injury and cause like a ruction, basically, because you got checked. Yeah, the check to you was unfair and it was from behind and it was already being reviewed because Galakos sat for 10, 2 plus 10. But I think the fact that you, like, the fact, but in it, well, I'm going off on a tangent here, I know, but I do think that although Ferretta is wrong in what he's doing, I think the fact that I think Galakos he's over 100 penalty minutes in the league already, and we've only played 10 games, and I think most of them are checked from behinds or checked to the head. So, you know, Ferretta, he shouldn't have done it, but it kind of opened the eyes to Dobbs to make a stand and, you know, make an example of Galakos or Ferretta for doing something like that, and they just didn't. You know, they give that Galakos a one-game ban for kicking while he was on the floor. Like, yeah, he shouldn't have kicked, but he was, like, kind of defending himself as someone who's actually trying to take his head off. So, it's just that.
If you consider it a kick. Sean, I mentioned earlier the fact that it sets a dangerous precedent that it's only one game ban, but am I being naive in thinking that there is any sort of precedent set with Dobbs, because Fretter's incident could just as likely be a 10-game ban next week?
I'm just sort of, while I've been listening to you, you know, both sort of discuss this, I've just been sort of scrolling through my timeline on Twitter, and it is staggering. I've been listening, but I've just been sort of checking Twitter as well. And it is literally staggering the amount of players who have, you know, there's a big sort of hoorah about, you know, the social media policy in this league and all this sort of thing, and now players shouldn't, you know, undermine the league and all this sort of thing. But literally, so many players, Andrew Hotham, Joey Martin, Sean Bendivoglio, Adam Keefe, the whole league is, you know, former players, Russ Cowley, you know, the Twitter has absolutely exploded from current past players. Max Beerbrey has put something on there because they just cannot believe what is going on with this, because You look at the strides that this league has made the last couple of years. You know, Dobbs to start off with, you know, it was something. We thought it was going to get better. And, you know, that was a positive move. You look at what ourselves and Nottingham have done in the CHL. You look at the fact that now video review is in place in some capacity. You know, we are taking steps to be a bigger and better league. And then you just look at this, and you're telling me that a top leading official in Sweden, North America, is giving Colton Freter a one game suspension for that. You are literally blowing from your backside, because that is absolute drivel. Because there is no way that in the NHL, in the SHL, any other league in the world, that a player like that is given a one game suspension. I know the ultimate decision is with Simon Kirkham, but if that is the case and Simon Kirkham is making that decision, even though other, you know, other league representatives and officials have given him advice, then they're just not doing what they're set out to do. They called the Department of Player Safety. And as every single player is coming out and saying, that should be at the forefront of what goes on in this league. Your players are your most valuable assets, and they need to be protected. The NHL realises it. All the top leagues in the world realise that their prized possessions and their best assets are the players. And if we keep doing this, we're going to put this league back 10 years. Players aren't going to want to come here. You know, the Joey Mines, the Matthew Waz, the Andrew Hothams, they're not going to want to come and play here, because this is the precedent that's being set. And if that is the precedent that's being set, then we are in for a very, very tough couple of years of British ice hockey, because we will not have the level of talent coming in import-wise to maintain the standard, which we've brought up and up over the couple of years. And I read the DOPS FAQ yesterday, funnily enough. I was just scrolling through it yesterday. And I think the very last thing it says, and Paul, you pointed it out to me, I think it was last week, and it finishes off with, does the player have to do that? You know, the player that they're reviewing, is the player required to do that to be competitive in a play? And what Colton Freter did, what the Belfast player did, what those two did was not necessary to compete in the game. Point blank, they didn't have to do it, and they should be, both of them should be scrutinised. You know, if this was one of our players, I'd say, you know, if you try and do that to someone, you need to be banned, because why? It's a stupid play to make. It's not, you know, it's not like he stood in front of the net going to score a game-winning goal in a game 7 of the Stanley Cup final. It's not that. You know, the puck is... the puck isn't anywhere near it. It's just got no influence on what's going on in the game of hockey. It brings the game into total disrepute. The two players themselves should be ashamed of themselves for what's happened, but Dobbs should take a long, hard look at itself. Simon Kirkham should take a long, hard look at himself and realising what he's doing to this game. Sorry for the rat and the raid, but it is literally... I'm watching it explode over Twitter, and I think the players coming out has literally made me see that this is getting beyond a joke, and we are going to lose a lot of valuable assets in this league, because it's done so much good in the last few years. It's been the most competitive it's been. The talent level's been through the roof, and we're just going to go back years and years, back to the days when it was a class as a B league, if we carry on like this. And I love what some of the players are saying with regards to the four-man system. The game is too fast to be doing with a three-man system now, and we need that four-man system in place.
Yeah, and a lot of the niggly incidents just get cut out at source. You don't get the reactions, and you're saying about losing like good players, and but you think like even guys like Joey Martin, they're not dirty players. Sometimes you will get a check wrong and get it wrong, and maybe you're going to get some sort of retribution, but you would never expect that retribution to be a check to the back of the head while the puck's nowhere near you. And I think so on that side, I can definitely see it. Where Aaron, you mentioned the check from behind from Goulakis, he didn't receive a ban for that. They judged that as a 5+ game and gave him the whole three game ban was for the kick that for me was as Freter came down on top of him. He put his arms up because his legs up just to try and stop him coming down and hitting him again. Because if you'd been hit from behind, you go into a defensive position. So he got three games for me just trying to defend himself. Ridiculous. And Goulakis not getting, you know, don't want it to be us having a go at Freter because it is the worst incident. Goulakis does not get a ban for that. He definitely checks him from behind, probably to the head as well. I think there was another one in the game I've read. I've not seen the highlights of that one. That's 5+ game. Danik Paquette checks Justin Farina from the side-ish. So it's a blind side. First point of contact probably isn't the head we discussed last week. He gets a 2-game ban for it. So, that's something that's gone in Cardiff's favour. So, which I probably just about agreed with. I think we all said it. Maybe one game would have been a bit fairer. And then a seemingly worse hit that leads to a escalation of an incident gets less of it. And so just then, looking at the Jesse Craig one, and if you haven't seen this one, because it's obviously not gone around Twitter as much, it's been retweeted by Adam Keefe this evening. It literally is a carbon copy of Paul Crowder in Milton Keynes, which was also awful. A stick swung aimed at the head. I think the difference with this one is it does look like it makes contact. I think Crowder caught the shoulder. It was quite lucky, really, that there was no damage. Dobbs have reviewed it, have agreed that it is a slash, and have given him a 5+ game. Paul Crowder got a 3-game ban. And I'm obviously not a referee, but I cannot see a single difference between what happened in those two instances. And if it is the panel, and we're going to different, maybe when Paul Crowder was looked at, it was a different panel. Maybe this week they've sent it off to beer leagues in Canada, where this is the done thing. Simon Kirkham is the head, obviously has the final decision, but surely he's also got to enforce some consistency on what are ultimately his rulings. And you just think, if you look at that, you can't go more than one game either side Paul Crowder, because it's an identical incident. And I don't know, I think Neil Russell has spoken at quite some length as well tonight about the DOPS is broken and it needs to be fixed. Obviously, no longer, very recently, no longer involved with a club. So, whatever shackles he had has been released, and he has openly said that. And if one thing comes out of this, surely now the Elite League have to do something about it. I know the Elite League is the teams, and it probably doesn't help. You've had Belfast have gone out and quite rightly criticised. Quite rightly, we'll talk about that as well. Sorry, let's go all in. So Belfast have put a tweet out calling Department of Player Safety with player in quotation marks, in detailing and giving the incident, saying what the bans were. I've not seen them as an official account doing any more than that. If the Steelers account had put that out, Sean, would we be saying it's totally unprofessional, or would we be saying good on them for speaking out against DOPS? Is it a double standard because of who they are, or do you think it is unprofessional they've done it from the official account?
I think it is I do agree with you that if it was Sheffield, then there'd be even more people jumping on it. I agree with what Aaron said in the fact that people hate Sheffield. Anything Sheffield do, it can be the littlest thing. The tweet that Manchester put out was not very well received by anyone, which basically was making a mockery of DOPS, saying that their captain, who faced a 2-match suspension for checking to the head, was coming back, was back this week and all this sort of thing. Putting the video up all over Twitter when the player who actually hit to the head is still out injured with concussion. And I personally thought it was great and giggled at the fact that they were poking fun at DOPS, but a lot of people have got a bit upset about it, which makes total sense. But if it was Sheffield, there would have been absolute riots about it. And I do think that Sheffield sometimes do get a rough deal with what they do, but purely because they're hated. Listen, I dislike Sheffield immensely, but I also dislike Belfast immensely. And I do like, if it was Sheffield, in this instance, I would say good for them. Good for them that they did it, because I think that everyone now, I think this is the time now where you stop looking at teams and who it benefits and all this sort of thing, and you look at the bigger picture of the league. And there are players from Sheffield or players from everywhere, past, present, and all the different teams going absolutely crazy about this. And maybe this is the final straw now, where everyone's sort of saying, look, let's do it together and let's get rid of this absolute farce and bring it back into our own hands again and do it somehow different, because this can't be as good as it gets. I think the teams all pulling together in that way is the best way it can go. I just think that they all need to buck their ideas up, and maybe the Scottish teams who didn't want to, or whoever didn't want to go with the 4-man system, is now seeing this and thinking, we're really going to have to consider doing this again, because it is just, It's crazy. It's a crazy situation to be in. And good on Belfast. Good on Belfast for doing it. If they get fined, I hope that people club together and pay a couple of quid to pay it off, because they're trying to do what's, you know, they're trying to, you know, stick their heads above the cloud and point out what's going wrong at the surface, and good on them for it.
Yeah, and one final thing on in terms of the, you know, sort of levels of exposure it's got, it's actually been picked up by ITV News as well, the differing bans for Fratter and Goulakos, showing the clip of the incident and sort of asking how the player who's lying on the floor protected himself is three times worse off than the, well, not the instigator, than the guy through that specific hit. So, reputationally, it may even be reaching further than ice hockey circles at the moment, which is,
You
know, it's not good to see, but, you know, as you said again, if it does shine that light on it and it does get it fixed, then maybe in the long run it's a bit of short-term pain that we'll see some gain, but, you know, I think historically...
EIHL DOPS is actually trending in the UK as well at the moment, and, you know, which is a shame because our game is so good in so many different ways, and this is what brings it to the prompt, to the public sort of eye, and that's a real shame.
It is. It's always the way with ice hockey. You know, you even see it in America. It's always those. Mm. It's always the bad side of the game that always gets picked up, as it is with most sports. To be fair, you know, you only see things about sports you don't follow when something either properly amazing or really awful happens. So. It's probably an indictment on society as a whole, but that's a lot deeper than we're probably going to want to go tonight. I think Jason, we might have answered your question there. If you need any more clarification, give us a shout. But I don't think I've got anything that I haven't said about it. I was quite cathartic. I feel so much better getting all that off my chest. You guys, listeners, you might not feel the same. You've had to listen to that. Maybe, you know, sorry if you're still listening. But we have gone quite long, so we'll move swiftly on to the coming weekend. And a huge game at home on Saturday. Crazy. It's the end of October, and we're welcome to Coventry to Cardiff for the first time this season. Probably the first time it's ever happened. It's gone this late since the league's been in the current structure. And a game that, it is must win. If Cardiff win, we qualify for the quarterfinals of the Challenge Cup. If we lose, we are almost certainly out. I think there's some sort of mathematical improbability in Group A that could see us through as a third place runner up. But yeah, it's pretty much it's a must win. Coventry tonight have played Wednesday night. They've beaten a massively depleted Edinburgh team 7-1. I think they're already suffering with injuries and had three players walk out on them just yesterday, I think, or maybe Monday. So, you know, 7-1 win, but that's going to have been a difficult night for Edinburgh, you'd imagine. But Aaron, Coventry showed last weekend when we went up there that, you know, that they are a battling team. I think their fans are not massively happy. There seems to be quite a bit of, you know, clamour for some changes, but, you know, not an easy game coming up for the Devils by any stretch of the imagination.
No, I think Danny Stewart done a good job of recruiting this year. Got some key players in, and they're a different setup than last year. You know, they're winning games. They're up to fourth in the league at the moment, and although they're at the Challenge Cup, they hate playing us, and they always want to win against us. So it's not going to be an easy game at any stretch of the imagination, but hopefully we can carry the performance from Nottingham over and take the 2 points, qualify for the Challenge Cup, and, you know, maybe make the final again this year.
Yeah, and I think it's probably safe to say our season really kicked off last year when we did get out of that Challenge Cup group. It was a struggle last year as well, but I do think if Coventry beat us and win their other remaining game, I think they can still qualify through various mathematical qualifications. So, you know, not a team coming with nothing to play, Sean. And, you know, and also interesting that it's going to be Danik Paquette, I think, probably his first game back, but definitely his first game against us since that two-game ban and the slash in retaliation from Andrew Hotham. So, you know, another element added into the mix for the game.
Yeah. It is going to be a, like you said, it's a must-win game. we did all this last year. We struggled in the Challenge Cup. We were worried we weren't going to get out of it, and we went on to win the thing. Hopefully we have turned a corner with that performance against Nottingham. I think Andrew Lord said in his post-game interview on Sunday we were hoping to get some bodies back this week, so that would be good. Tyson Strachan, our newest addition, has got a week of practices under his belt and a bit more, bit of a better understanding. And we are at home, which, you know, you always back the home team and all that sort of thing. So I think it's a massive thing for us to get through to the next stage. You know, it'll be a genuine disaster if we don't qualify for the next stage. I think that's fair to say. And we got to do it. Basically, it's a must-win situation, and maybe the team need that sort of game early on. I think maybe that helped us last year going down the stretch. Is that, you know, that was a game set. You know, maybe not to the extent of a game seven, but you know, it was a must-win game, and I think the players sort of let that mentality get into their mind, and then it just, you know, it stayed with them through the course of the year, and that's maybe why we were so successful, that they got a bit of a reality check. And I think it'll be good for us to be in that situation, and maybe the pressure will help us.
Yeah. I think it's been said a few times that we've discussed it here. Last season's team definitely seemed to thrive on the pressure. This situation can bring that out of the current team as well. And then Sunday, the long trek up to Fife for the team to play in Fife Arena. Never a nice place to go. A place where we've lost a game in the last two, maybe even three seasons. At least one of the games in Fife has we've come unstuck. And they've had a solid start to the season, sitting sort of quite comfortably mid table with 10 points from seven games. I was just looking at their conference standings. They've only played three games, which are all against Brayhead. And they've scored 17 before, which is probably more of an indictment on Brayhead than Fife. But you know, they're a team who've got five regulation wins in seven games. So that's a team that started the season well. They are at home to Sheffield on Saturday. So, you know, not an easy game for them the night before, but they're not going to have any travel. Sean, a tricky tie, and you possibly call it a banana skin, but Fife have had a good start to the year. They are sitting above us in the table. Surely it's not a team that you're going to take lightly anyway.
They are, and it's a tough place to go. It's, we lost a game there last year on our triple header, and they're a good team at home. They seem to have put together a good lineup, and their fans are really, really into it. I've seen a couple of tweets that they're a real hard-working, gritty team, and Fife is a hard, real, real hard place to go. And after playing a must-win game against Coventry, I think that it's going to be a really tough test for us. And I'm looking forward to watching that game and seeing what Fife have to offer, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, Aaron, your thoughts on the game?
It'd be exciting to see them come down. You know, they've been put in. I've noticed the last couple of weeks that for like the Player of the Week awards that elite prospects do, they always got a player in the mix. So I'm excited to see what talent they've scouted, and you know, they're winning games. They smashing Brayhead like most teams are at the moment, and you know, they're on the way to winning as early in the season. But you know, that their conference is up for grabs at the moment. So I'm expecting more of a competitive game than other Scottish teams that we may play this year. So, yeah, I'm excited for it. You know, it's a good weekend for hockey for us. You know, it's a must-win game against Coventry at home, and it's a must-win league game against Fife away, and it's one of the hardest places to go in the league at the moment. So it'll be tough to take the 2 points, but I'm hoping we can carry the performance from Saturday with a couple of the guys back from injury. Tyson Strachan of almost full strength, you know, we should be unstoppable, and I don't see why not we won't be.
Cool.
Liam Healis, just wanted to mention one of the five players for you, just very quickly, leading the scoring charts across Challenge Cup and League in 12 games. he's got 9 goals and 10 assists already for 29 points.
Ooh.
19 points in 12 games. That's definitely a player to be watching out for. But they've got a number of players running above a point a game. Peter LeBlanc, Evan Bloodoff, and Chase Shaver are all over a point a game at the moment for Fife. So you're a team that definitely know how to find the net, and you're going to need to be a good defensive performance from the Devils. Sorry, Sean, you were going to say.
Just a quick one, quiz you both, or question for you both. Win Saturday and progress to the Challenge Cup next round, or win on Sunday and take the lead points?
I would say Challenge Cup. If we lose Saturday, we're out of the Challenge Cup. If we lose Sunday, we're not out of the league. I think it's early enough in the season that you can make that back. Aaron?
Definitely Challenge Cup win on Saturday. You know, it's a must-win game, and I think it's more pressure on us to qualify considering we're playing at home, and the last 3 years we've kind of made it our competition. So if we don't get out of the group against possibly one of the worst groups in the league at the moment, I think it's it pays dividends to how our start of the season is going. So it's a must win. So I hope we can pull out the bag.
John, your own question for yourself?
Both.
Oh, well, come on. You can't be...
I know, you give us an ultimate.
Challenge Cup as well.
Yeah. And as much as a fan you don't want to, you've got to think that the implications of losing a quarter-final... Obviously, the final being in Ice Arena Wales is probably quite a big financial implication on the club, which... It's obviously not top of the priority. I want to win another trophy. I want to win another final in Ice Arena Wales. It was fun. Let's do it again. I think that's everything. Guys, anything else that you want to add in that sort of quite lengthy show?
Yeah. Can we keep the Jake Morissette, Andrew Lord and Paul Crowder link together? Because they are fantastic as a trio. And that's all I have to say on that matter.
It did definitely work. Sean, anything you want to add? Or are we letting our listeners go?
Let them go.
As Frozen would say. Thank you, everyone, for listening. It was great to have so many Rahmite suggestions through, so please get them through to us again. Your funny line combinations, we want those as well, and your burning questions. Let's have as much to discuss next week. We may even be a little bit less ranty. But thank you for listening again. And for now, that is your Red Army Rounder. Devil inside, every single one of us. Time.